the Mobile Kintec Studio. It is Canuck Central. We are on location at Park Casino, the place to be pre-gaming before and post-gaming after Canucks games. Park Casino, the official casino resort for the Vancouver Canucks, and we're here at the Center Bar. We're giving away a Canucks jersey today with a raffle, so you can come by, say hello to us, maybe Chad Kruger as well, who just popped in for a little bevy before the game. And also, more importantly, our friend, our pal, a presentation of White Rock Hyundai every Wednesday here on Canucks Central, Kevin Woodley. What's happening?
I'm waiting for the line. Where's the lineup? You guys, I'm waiting for you guys.
You signed an autograph
here
tonight?
For you to sign autographs. I saw like big giant foam fingers. I actually thought those were people bringing those in to cheer for you guys while you were doing this show.
Well, we do have foam fingers for people to pick up on their way to the game if they want to stop in too. So
I like it. I like the atmosphere, the vibe up here. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I haven't been up here before.
So oh, really?
This is, you know, I mean, because normally, pregame, I like to just chill out in my White Rock Hyundai.
Yeah.
You know, like just,
you'll sleep
my
in
little,
that
my little mobile.
You'll take a little nap.
100% I'm having a nap after we get off here. It's a long day, boys. It's a long day. You got to pace yourself. But this is a nice setup. I like it up here.
No, it's cool. And it's not just if you don't want to have a drink or don't want to, you know, try your luck. You can grab a bite to eat and hang out, too. They got the games and sports on, too. So it's a nice spot to hang out.
Yeah, I can see. And with the casino, I can actually, you know, I mean, this is so close to Rogers.
Yeah.
It surprises me that not every team is here. And yet, this is the reason not every team is here.
Yeah.
there's a very distinct reason that some teams prefer not to stay here, and that's just strictly the proximity of the casino.
But it's a JW Marriott. It's like, you know, it's usually the class of hotel players stay at.
Yeah, 100%. The best JW Marriott story I have is Venice. And I'm trying to remember who I talked to recently that stayed at the same one. It was Farhan. And so when you arrive, it's by boat.
No way.
And
of course.
Through like, of course. And it, and the taxi boat takes you into this tunnel, like the closest I have ever felt to being James Bond. I remember like turning to my kids and being like, this is like a James Bond movie. And they're like, Dad, shut up and sit down. You're embarrassing us. But it was so good. So good. So the J-Dub down here is not quite at the James Bond entrance level, but it's a pretty sweet spot.
It is a pretty great one. We're here at Park Casino. You can come by and stay high before you make your way down to Rogers Arena. Or if you want to watch the game here tonight, plenty of televisions for you to do so as well. All right. So getting in on the Canucks. I mean, it's the start of the season, Woodley, right? So everybody's doing their preseason predictions and things like that. But, you know, one thing is apparent. Everybody views the Canucks as kind of like a team in and around 100 points and a team that's likely to be fighting for the Stanley Cup this year. I mean, it's wild how far we've come in a couple of years.
It's remarkable if you think about it. Like, and it goes to show you that people see sticking power in what happened last year.
Yeah.
They see staying power in the way they did it. You know, and I think that comes from the defensive profile that they've adopted and adapted to under Rick Tocchet, because we saw the strong finish 2 years ago, and I think there was still a lot of doubt. Or like when Boudreau's last year, he comes off the strong finish, they don't make the playoffs, but everyone was, there was excitement. Mm-hmm. But I think when we looked at the numbers, it's like, I don't know, like, let's slow the roll here. I think everything they've got here is sustainable, and the only thing I'm curious is, amidst all the talk, and I wonder how much of it is just us talking about it and the focus it gets in this market, how much does this push for more offense, especially off the rush, really, how different really does it look? And is there a way to balance it without losing those key defensive underlying numbers that I think were paramount to their success, not only in the regular season, but especially in the playoffs, without Thatcher Demko after game one to push the Oilers to game seven. Like, yes, they didn't create enough, but they were still in it the whole way, right? Like, I just think abandoning that, not that I think they will, but you have to, it's a slippery slope, and you don't want to lose that.
Well, the coach has said exactly what you mentioned. You have to be careful and not go to lose your identity as a team. And what's really cool about the stuff that you can access through Clear Sight's analytics is some really, you know, underlying numbers about how the Canucks executed. And you're right about the rush chance stuff, because you told us something before the show, and I can't wait for you to share it. As much as the Canucks were one of the worst teams, maybe the worst, in generating rush chances, does that necessarily mean bad things for the playoffs? Because other teams may not be as good at it that are good in the playoffs.
Well, the good news is when you are dead last, and they were 32nd in high danger chances off the rush last year, there's nowhere to go but up. So that's the thing. Like, and absolutely, and like, I'm not disagreeing that it needed to improve, and they've clearly, they've added so much more speed on the wings that there's all kinds of room for improvement. And with that speed also works the other way. Mm-hmm. You can also track back with speed, and so you don't necessarily have to, you know, be giving up chances the other way. 32nd last year, but the team that was 31st was the Florida Panthers. So that, I think that says a lot about, like, you.
Yeah.
You know, clearly they need more, but the Panthers hoisted a cup, and they were not much better than the Vancouver Canucks when it came to generating rush chances. The things the Canucks were exceptional at last year in terms of how they generated offense was a lot of that grinding play. And the thing that comes with that grinding play and holding on pucks down low, what are you not doing? You're not defending.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're in the offensive zone. Even if it's not a high danger chance every time, even you got to be very careful that you don't become one and done off the rush, because that means you're defending more. And a big part of how their improvements defensively last year was the fact they just didn't defend as much. They were willing to hold pucks in the offensive zone. So where were they good? Screens, 8th in the NHL, expected goals, 4 off screens. Deflections, 10th. Rebounds, number 1 in the National Hockey League on rebounds. And you know, we'll talk a bit about Nils Höglander and where he scores his goals after he got that extension. He's a big part of that. Broken plays is an area where I think they need to improve. Interestingly enough, it's a stat I don't think they track individually. I don't think they have that in their arsenal under the analytics companies that they use, and it's one of the top ways to generate offense in the NHL. Just 19th. Breakaways, 25th. Clear-sighted shots, 25th. Slot line, lateral plays, 27th. Slot area shots, 30th. Like, a lot of that isn't good enough, and there is ways to improve it. And I think when you have a coaching staff this committed to digging into this kind of stuff and finding ways, they will, you'll have improvements. But the big one to me is they don't all have to be off the rush. Mm-hmm. You've got the personnel to be better, but you don't need to become that. You don't need to become the New York Islanders under Doug Weight, where every night's an all-star game, because clearly that doesn't work.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Tockett, during training camp, you mentioned, you know, we didn't create enough rush chances last year, but we converted on a lot of our rush chances. So he is, like, in tune with some of these things. He talks all the time about we need to score more off broken plays on the power play. He's mentioned that a bunch. So Tockett really is in tune with where the team needs to improve and how they score more goals. And I think, you know, more than anything, it feels like part of this is when they got to the playoffs last year, he couldn't break them from the safe mentality when they needed to be able to push the pace a little bit more at times against Nashville and certainly against Edmonton as well.
And he's talked about it's situational, right? Making the right read and in the right spot. And yeah, I mean, there's certainly that element. And at the same time, there's a little part of me, like, yeah, if you're behind in a playoff game and you've got to chase and you've got to catch it, like, it is such a fine line because if you go too far that way, if you start chasing things and trying to force things that aren't there to create offense, what often happens? That's when you start giving up the odd man rushes the other way and bleeding chances that way. And so it's about, like, there were times, yes, when you score as often as they do late and comebacks and obviously the Nashville game and almost in game 7 against the Oilers and all those things, it's, you know, not the way you want to play and not repeatable. But I kind of actually like the fact that they didn't come out of their structure when they got behind, like that they still tried to score the same way. And I think what you want to achieve this year is find more ways to score, more ways to generate more chances and make that a part of it and find those lines in the season on when you can push and when not to push so that you have that extra button in the playoffs and it's not just grind every time, dump it down low, work it back to the point, try and find those screens and tips and rebounds.
Well, and then you mentioned Nils Höglander. He got a new 3-year contract, and he scored 24 goals last year, and we spend a lot of time talking about him having a high shooting percentage, but it's also how he scored the goals. How sustainable is it, and what are things that perhaps he may have to improve or do better to ensure he can score 20-plus again?
He's got to go to the front of the net, and that's how he did it last year. That's not a surprise. Tocchet talked about it yesterday. He talked about being down low in front and using the hands to convert those chances. Out of his 24 goals last year, 18 were what we call net, what Clearsight identifies as net play, sort of like a low slot. Basically, if you take where the trapezoid meets the goal line and draw a straight line up to the circles, it's kind of in the corner of the circle and then straight across. It's a box in front of the net. 18 of 24 goals there last year on just 45 shots.
Yeah.
That's 40% shooting in tight. Is that sustainable? And the playoffs, he generated 6 in 11 games, and you're kind of like, oh, did it fall off? No. It's about half. He's basically averaging a half per game, right? The difference is he didn't convert at the same rate in the playoffs, only 1 of the 6. So just keep doing that. Like, if Höglander, as much as he has all that skill, if he doesn't do that, you'll see a drop-off.
Right.
Because he is not beating guys clean off the funnel. I think he had only one goal from each side, sort of in the lanes up around the dots, what they call the funnel lane, four from the high slot. Yeah, his expected goals last year were 14, and he scored a 24.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's probably going to come back, but it's going to regress massively if he stops going to those areas. And I'm not worried about that happening because he's part of this conversation. You hear, he's aware of it. So yeah. Is Tockett. They know where he has to go to score goals. And so, but having a guy that size with that skill that's willing to do it the way he did last year, and it gets a little tougher in the playoffs, that's what you need, right? You can't just have big guys that go in there and bang there and, you know, basically like Christian Laettner putting back rebounds, just slamming it off the pad. You have to get there, win position, puck on, get stick on puck, and be able to elevate. And he does that as well as anyone, and that's why you see the goal totals as high as they are.
Yeah, good hands and tight, and I think that one goal that you're talking about was probably the goal against the Leafs where he whipped he whipped the wrist shot and beat clean the goaltender that night. So yeah, when you can remember the few times that Nils Höglander beat a goalie from outside that zone that you're talking about, it shows just how much of an inside player he's become.
And it's a good thing. Guys get contracts and guys start to think maybe they can do different things. And so is it a worry? I mean, maybe in the back of your mind, I just think this coaching staff has their players so in tune with what they need to do to succeed and show them that picture clearly that he'll be aware of all these things. And so, does he change his game because he got the contract extension? My bet is no. But if you see the numbers fall off, it'll probably be because he's not getting to enough of those same pucks this year.
When we talked to Patrick Alvin the other day, we asked about Brock Besser and the contract, right? Because it is the big contract that is now coming up for the Vancouver Canucks. And he had this odd, I guess, confidence stat maybe that you know they're going to be able to get something done with Brock, and maybe the Verhaeghe contract yesterday helps them do that because it is a pretty fair comp for Brock Besser. But there's things that we've talked about over the last little while that Brock's really started to do well. Maybe don't even show up in the goal column all the time, but his net front play has really improved over the last 12 months.
Yeah, no, and so he scores 40 last year. Tell you is responsible for 53 without an assist on the other 13.
Mm. Yeah.
So fourth in the entire National Hockey League at offensive screens that led to goals. So we talked about this a little last year, and I was trying to find a way without having to go through all the video to quantify it.
Right.
And I remember talking about having this conversation with JT Miller about how Brock had embraced that and how good he was. And the comparison that Miller made was Chris Kreider, who's the best in the NHL.
Yeah.
Well, he was. Kreider was 16th. So ClearSight has added this into their analytics. And Kreider was first in the NHL with 16 screens that led directly to goals. Besser was fourth at 13. The two guys between them each had 14. Joel Eriksson Ek, which surprised me a little bit, and Val Nichushkin, who, again, on the power play with the way the guys shoot around him and that big body. So Besser's in there, top four in the National Hockey League at screens. And this is a guy who, just a couple of years ago, didn't want to be the net front guy, was reluctant. So you add that ability to create offense and work off of JT and work off the shooters to make sure he's not just there. We've talked about this before. You can't just be in front of the net. You actually have to be manipulating what side the goaltender's looking and doing it in the right timing, playing off the way the passes are moving and the shots are coming so that the goalie's moving and losing sight as the shot's being released, all things that Besser does well. But then you think of all the goals he banged in off the rebounds. His ability to sort of have the screen slide off to the side as the shot's coming, and if the puck's there on a rebound, again, good hands in tight, right? Think of how many guys would have panicked after not being able to put the first one back against Nashville, but his poise and patience to pull it back over the goal line and convert that second or third opportunity. So, again, skill guys that learn there are other ways that you have to, other things and other ways to score goals, and probably not a coincidence that this has happened under a coaching staff that seems to want to dig into this minutia and teach and do all these things. It's kind of fun. I'm getting all smiley because it reminds me of the goalie geek stuff, right? Because you have to, JT, watching video, this is how you do it in the NHL today, and you seem to have a staff that's embraced that. One little interesting note on the screen goals. Pettersson also had 7 last year, was credited for 7. Elias Lindholm was tied with him. They were the next highest Canucks in that regard. So, another element that I'm not sure Lindholm got talked about enough is his hit, the way he went to the front of the net as well as the center, something they might miss with him gone as well.
A lot of positives, right, in terms of what Lindholm brought that didn't always pop out on the stat sheet. And it's really nice to see the stuff about Besser, because he's such a smart player that's finally embracing playing quote-unquote the right way, and you see how that kind of, you know, pays off. Before we let you go, we got to get to some goalie stuff here with you.
I did my best. I did my best to totally avoid the goaltending.
But hey, we got to drag you back in before we let you go here. You got to get your nap in too, pregame. But we know that, so the Canucks reclaimed Yuri Patera, so all the concern about lacking some depth, that's back into the equation. And we heard the general manager tell us, Patrick Alvin, that he is very open to carrying three goalies if they need be. Is that actually something you think they'll execute on, or an option they may have? I know we talked about this quite a bit with Abbotsford being close and you having the luxury with Shilov's not requiring waivers, but is that ultimately something that makes a lot of sense?
It can, yeah, for sure. It absolutely, it can. Like everybody sort of cringes. I mean, the math is simple. Even somebody as stupid as me can do it. Three doesn't go into two, right? You've only got two nets. The goalies want to be in the net, practice as well. But you've also heard me talk about practice goalies.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard some talk about, you know, them maybe looking at ways to sort of manage the rest when Demko does come back down the stretch, you know, fly him ahead to a city and dress the other two on a night when he's not going to play. These are all things other teams are already doing. Okay, so like teams that had three goalies, Montreal did it several times last year. They had back-to-back games. The goalie was starting the second end of back-to-back, wasn't with the team on the first. He flew ahead, didn't have to arrive at 2 in the morning. He was already in a hotel room in the other city. So other teams have already found ways to do this. From a development standpoint, you worry a little bit about Archers if he doesn't get games played. Right, and that's where being able to slide him down to Abbotsford for a weekend to get a couple of games in, as much as that's probably not his choice, and as much as I expect him to play his ass off to try and make sure he's not the guy that does that, the reality of not clearing waivers makes it possible. But the other part is, you know, and I talked a little bit in Montreal when they had, was Caden Primeau. For all the negative attention about it in the Montreal media, Caden kind of liked it. He enjoyed the extra time. Mm. Now, the difference there is they had a practice rink with two sheets.
Right.
So he would quite often slide off to the other sheet and get specific goalie work in with the goalie coach where the other two guys were sort of out there. And the reality of practice oftentimes is you're a target out
there. Right, yeah.
So not having that extra sheet hurts a little bit, but certainly there are ways to manage it so that everybody gets the reps. Maybe not all the reps they want, but all the reps they need, and more importantly, all the rest they need heading into the playoffs. I don't think it has to be, every time we have a three-goalie system in the league, everybody cringes, and I don't think it has to be that way. You can find ways to make it a positive.
Well, Vancouver loves itself a good goalie controversy, so I can only imagine how the fan base would last with three goalies going around. But Demko is that good that we know who the guy is here, right? And I guess, you know, after hearing from Alvin this week, it's really hard to gauge where Demko's at in his timeline. They're not sharing any sort of timeline. Is there anything that you've been hearing as far as where we're at with Thatcher?
No, I think they've done a, you know, pretty much since Penticton when they could keep him away from our eyes. I don't know that anybody's had eyes on the shot. So you hear rumblings here, rumblings there, maybe not going so well when the drills become more game-like. I haven't heard anything that is concrete. I haven't seen anything, and so I just don't know. I think I go back to what Thatcher said heading into the season, and unless that's changed, everything seemed to be going in a positive direction. Getting Lankinen means there's no rush. You hope that it's continuing to go in that direction, because at the end of the day, to your point, as much as I think they're fine with the two goalies they have in the short term, like Demko's elite.
Yeah.
Demko's one of the top goalies in the league, and he gives you another layer, another level, a full percentage point in adjusted save percentage ahead of both those guys that can be a difference maker, whether it's down the stretch or especially into the playoffs. Like there are only a handful of guys that I hand that elite status to, and he's definitely in that list. And so whatever you can do, it doesn't matter whether he's healthy at the beginning of the season, especially with Lankinen in here. It's whether he's healthy at the end.
Mm-hmm. Woodley, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for stopping in a little bit early. We'll let you get a nap in now.
Yeah, no, I mean, might have to go, you know, the tables. No, I think I'll go straight to the Ionic 5 and have a little, turn the heated seat on. Yeah. Ian McIntyre will come knock on my window as he walks into the rink, wake me up so I don't miss the puck drop.
The heated seats are always a great way to like, dial up the sleepiness.
And the 100% best part is with the EV, you don't have to be one of those guys that has to have the car on idle and gas. You just turn it on, plenty of room on the battery.
That's
life beautiful. Is good in the Ionic 5 from White Rock Hyundai.
He is Kevin Woodley on Sports at 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
Canucks.com. When we come back, overrated, underrated on Canucks Central. We didn't get to our award predictions for last year or for this upcoming year. Hart Trophy, Richard, Norris, and Vezina. Now, coming off a year where Connor McDavid didn't win the Hart, is it just the layup to say this is going to be a Connor McDavid year to win the Hart?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think that's a chalky one. Is that what you're going with, though?
I hate going with the chalk. Last year, I did go with MacKinnon. Happened to be right. Not like that's too far away from the chalk to go with the second best player in the league in Nathan MacKinnon. But my off-the-board pick this year is Jack Hughes.
Jack Hughes, okay.
I think he could have a huge season. I think the Devils are going to be great. They're a team that wasn't in the playoffs last year. Probably a playoff team this year. Had them winning the Metro Division in our conversation yesterday. So I think the Devils have a really strong regular season. I could see Jack Hughes putting it all together if he stays healthy, have a 100-point year, and that would at least put him in the conversation for the Hart Trophy because, like, a lot of times, like, I think there's value or thinking about the way people are going to vote if you think about a team that wasn't in the playoffs last year, it's going to be in the playoffs this year.
I mean, if he's a top five, has a top 5 point season, and the Devils are a top team, he's one of the guys that fits into the mold, right?
So that would be my off-the-board pick.
Yeah, I think the obvious ones, it could be Kucherov, I think would be a good one too, if Tampa bounces back a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. He has a big year. But I'm going to give a little local flavor. I'm going to go with Elias Pettersson winning the Hart Trophy. Having a massive season, I think I could see him having a big year. Top 5 point season, top 5 defensive impact as a center. If he does that, he should be in the conversation. So I'm going to go with Petey.
For my Richard Trophy winner, I am going with the chalk, Austin Matthews, to win the Richard. I think he scored 70 goals this year.
I'm going with Pasternak.
David Pasternak.
Yeah, Lindholm next to him this year. He's going to have a big year.
For the Norris, I want to say Quinn Hughes, but, like, it's hard to win it in back-to-back years. So I'm looking at somebody else, and I think it could be a Cale Makar year. Him and Hughes are going to go back and forth for a couple of years.
Yeah, I can see that. The guy I'm going with this year, Miro Heiskanen.
Nah, all right.
He's due to win one.
I think the hardest thing for Heiskanen is he going to score as much as the other guys?
No, I know. But I think he's good enough that eventually he's going to crack through, and this might be the year.
And for your Vezina Trophy, who are you going with?
I'm going with the $88 million man, a man who turned down $88 million. he's going to demand a lot of money, so he's going to play really well. I'm going to Igor Shesterkin.
You know what? I think Jeremy Swayman coming off the big contract. Boston is not going to be – like, he's going to have to – be incredible for Boston to reach some of the heights they've been at the last couple of years. And he's going to take a bigger share of the starters' load than he has in the past because there's no Linus Allmark to fall back on.
So, rookie of the year? I'm going Matvei Michkov.
I'm going with Celebrini.
All right.
Going to go with the Italian. Celebrini, huh? all right. There's our award predictions for this year. Going to get into the pregame show as the Canucks and Calgary Flames coming up. Puck drop in an hour here on Sportsnet 650.